guys, I'm Heather, and I'm the oldest. She's the emotional one.
I don't know anybody
to try to get it to come out here or here.
Jesus. Mary and Joseph and all of his carpenter friends.
Hey, guys, I'm Ben. I'm the middle child.
And he's the practical one.
Okay, here we go. Oh, what am I going to say, though?
Now y'all made me nervous.
It's going to be a time.
I'm a sensitive boy.
I'm Beth, and I'm the baby.
She's also the swing vote.
I've been hit.
I got the little frilly socks and everything.
Together, we make the Music List Podcast. And welcome back to the Music List Podcast. I am Ben. With me are my sisters, Heather and Beth. We are siblings that argue while making music lists. That's the shtick. That's what we do. Shtick. Interesting word.
Weirdo.
Interesting word. It's a S-C-H-T-I-C-K. Shtick.
Like the razor?
That's shick.
Oh.
But that's it. That's the shtick.
Okay.
That's what we do, is we argue. And today, we are going to make the definitive list, the most comprehensive list, the only list that matters when it comes to the very best of Motley Crue.
Nice.
What an important band Motley Crue is.
What?
Genre building, bending.
Genre?
Genre.
Entree.
Your own.
Genre bending. Uh-huh. Incredible ballads. Hard rock. You think they were devil worshippers? Or do you think they were just like throwing pentagrams and stuff and putting lyrics in the devil because they thought it would sell albums?
Yes. B.
B?
Yeah. I don't think they cared enough one way or the other.
You would say probably agnostic.
Yeah, if you're going to put a label on it.
We're going to label somebody else's opinion.
I have an argument about that later, but we get to it.
I mean, I think they grew up in pretty, if you read The Dirt.
I didn't read it. I watched it.
And especially.
The Netflix. It was Netflix, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And they grew up in very different environments. I think Tommy Lee grew up in a fairly conservative, maybe Catholic, suburban, two-parent household. And Nikki Sixx did not grow up that way at all. He his dad left when he was very early when he was little. And I don't think Mick Mars had a very strong nuclear family either. I don't know about Ben's. I almost said Vince Gill. Boy, wouldn't that be
definitely
something.
Not the same.
Yeah. How many times have they retired?
A lot.
Didn't Mick Mars say, I guarantee everybody can come to the concerts for free or something like that? And then of course they don't even went back on tour, but they've had several last tours, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Kiss. I mean, yeah. They kind of do the Kiss
thing. And strangely enough, they've gone out on tour with Kiss. Several times.
Yeah. So, but despite all, I mean, it's kind of like, they're kind of one of those bands that's kind of easy to make fun of. But at the same time, like when you look at the money they've generated, when you look at, now, I don't know. I haven't taken a long look at how many hits they've had. I'll talk into that. But I bet that they're a band that has outperformed their chart history. that their name outperforms their chart. That'd be my guess. Because I feel like it would be really hard for a lot of these to chart high. Like, I feel like there's probably a lot of songs that played on MTV a whole bunch.
Oh, yeah.
But did not get played as much on the radio.
Yeah, that's possible. They were definitely, they came along at the absolute right time. Because they just went headlong into the video era. I mean, they started in 1981, which was the same year as the premiere of MTV. They were playing on the Sunset Strip in the clubs, but as soon as they got signed, they went straight into that MTV world, and it's always done well for them, for sure.
And we talked, you know, we did Def Leppard two episodes back, and we talked about a lot of their videos were concert videos, were them, you know, and it seems like Motley Crue did a lot of that too. There were a lot of their videos were them in concert. With some dramatic interludes mixed in. But seemed like but Motley Crue was kind of a production too. I mean, you know, like Tommy Lee's like flipping upside down.
And
stuff like that.
His drum solos are quite the spectacle.
But you got some numbers for us, yeah?
I do. Like I said, they started out in 1981. Nikki Sixx was playing with a band called London. And Tommy Lee had started a band with another guy. And he was actually a fan of London and, you know, said, we need to get that guy. And then the other guy left the band, so... So Tommy and Nikki started advertising for, I think their ad in the paper said, like, loud, rude, obnoxious guitar player. And so here comes Mick, and he was a bit older and maybe a little more cynical, but
a bit.
The dude could play.
He looks ancient.
Well,
even back in the day.
My theory is that Mick Mars has been dead for about 10 years, and they just put him out on a dolly and stand him out there. But he's gone through some stuff. We'll talk about that in a minute. And then they got Vince Neil into the band, a blonde chick magnet, and the rest is history. They were going to name their band Christmas.
Okay.
Decided against that and went with Motley Crue, complete with umlauts, and because they were story goes that they were drinking Löwenbräu beer, so they stuck those umlauts on them.
Okay,
in the name, I don't know. They've sold 100 million records, more than 100 million records worldwide. 7 platinum or multi platinum. 9 of them have made the top 10. 9 of their albums have made the top 10. Only one number one album, 1989's Dr. Feelgood, but I was telling Sean earlier, Dr. Feelgood, they were releasing songs off that for years, which is pretty unusual, I think, for it to have such a long... Certainly now, albums don't release singles like that. 22,
that's what Shania Twain would do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just tour and release off of that album for a long time. 22 top 40 hits and 6 top 20 pop singles, so... definitely got the numbers on sales. They're known for their hedonistic lifestyles and near-death experiences. They have very elaborate performances, which I can verify. They are quite the spectacle. You know, I've seen Tommy Lee's roller coaster drum solo. I've seen his in the cage floating upside down drum solo. Lots of pyro, stuff like that. Of course, they wrote The Dirt, their autobiography, and in 2019, Netflix released a movie based on it. I enjoyed it. The movie, I think the book, there are So many stories, and just the Ozzy stories alone. R.I.P. Ozzy. They had kind of a shakeup around 1992. Vince Neil was replaced by John Corabi. There was quite the... Vince went through some stuff, too. He made some bad choices. He was involved in a fatal car accident where he was driving drunk and killed Razzle from Faster Pussycat. What are you then? And then, of course, his daughter tragically died of cancer when she was 4. And the band relationships didn't survive that. And so he was out for a while. He did come back. McMars retired. Retired? Depends on who you ask. in 2022, after 41 years in the band, he was replaced by John Five, who played with David Lee Roth, Marilyn Manson, Rob Zombie. McMars says he didn't retire. So, like I say, depends on who you ask. They've had some notable feuds, which are always fun, like with everyone in Metallica at some point, Guns N' Roses, to the point that Eddie Van Halen and Sammy Hagar offered to host the fight in Madison Square Garden when Godsmack, which... While Unfortunate produced one of my very favorite songs of all time because it was written about Nikki Sixx, Crying Like a... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was great. And the members of Steel Panther. So we've kind of read the... I don't know if you've ever heard any Steel Panther, but they're kind of a comedic metal band. Hilarious. But they managed to get on the wrong side of each other, too. However... They are 10th on MTV's top 10 heavy metal bands of all time. So that's, I would say, a pretty glowing review. Spin ranked Shout at the Devil 11th best metal album of all time.
Wow.
They've won American Music Awards. They've been nominated for Grammys, MTV Awards. I don't think they won any Grammys, but Dr. Feelgood came along when they decided to get sober. And so the difference in their music is quite noticeable when they went through that period of sobriety and management and all of that stuff. The tours, of course, were different. I love Motley Crue. Now, granted, I'm of an age where I was kind of coming up along. I mean, of course, 1981, I was 6. So, but I do distinctly remember on the playground us talking about somebody came to school and we were talking about Shout at the Devil. And I remember like trying to convince mom, no, it's Shout at the Devil. It's not, we're not devil, or, you know. And when I was in upper elementary, junior high age, even in rural suburban Arkansas, Satanic Panic was a thing. It was a thing. And now, did they use the imagery? And of course, mom and dad were conscientious, good parents. And of course, they didn't. They even the imagery is inappropriate for children. And so, you know, but when you're a junior high kid, you're going to get your hands on music that you're not supposed to. And so it was. I have mixed feelings about Motley Crue because as I've grown in my study of music and knowledge of music, of listening to current and older music. Are they the best technical band that has ever, you know, recorded? No, not at all. Are they fun? Yep. And I enjoy them. And I did have quite the crush on Nikki Sixx. So that influenced a lot of things, because
you kind of got to know.
I grew up in the late 80s.
You kind of got to know what you're getting into. You know it's not going to be Shakespeare. Right? I mean, the poetry that they put to music is not Walt Whitman. Right?
No, it's not.
Or Henry David Thoreau. I mean, that's not what we're talking about here.
Right.
You know, this is banal. It's very everything the Bible tells you not to be consumed with. Hedonism, fleshly desires, all of those things.
They got drunk a lot and fought, like to fight.
And what's interesting is, hook up. Like you could put, like if you look at them and you were just going to do it in sports, we call it the eye test, right? Does this team pass the eye test? When you watch Alabama players run out, you look at them and they're like 6'2", 215 pounds, 240 pounds. They run fast. They got big, massive muscles. They like, that looks like a football team. Just looking at the eye test, looks like somebody that can tear you apart.
Mm-hmm.
When you just look at Motley Crue compared to, say, let's take Hetfield from Metallica. That's a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
He looks, I don't know how tall he is, but he looks like he's a relatively big guy, mm-hmm. right? Lars doesn't. But if you look at Metallica on stage, you say, I bet those guys can whip somebody. Like, if there was a fight, I bet they'd be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Motley Crue doesn't give that vibe. Number one, because they're dressed like girls. They're dressed like girls, for one thing. Right? Dude, Vince Neil is wearing a white lacy glove.
Okay, well, we can talk about Vince
but
Neil.
But looks can be deceiving because they beat the snot out of people on a routine basis. They got into like fist fights all the time and won.
Yeah.
If the movie The Dirt was true, if that was accurate.
Well, I've read two of Nikki Sixx's biographies, and I mean, that was just a normal part of his upbringing.
They would look for fights.
Yeah.
They would look to start fights, which is wild to me.
They've pretty much gotten on the wrong side of everybody. That's what happened with them and Godsmack.
Yeah.
Godsmack hated the way that they treated everyone on their tour.
Now you tell me they had a problem with Guns N' Roses. I'm like, okay, a lot of people have problems with Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that is a volatile situation waiting to happen. You put Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses together.
Yeah.
Yes, somebody's going to get angry. But.
And I'm gonna say this just straight out the gate. Like, three of the four members of Motley Crue, I think, are
really good.
Really good musicians. I mean, he's a good bass player. He's a good hook and songwriter. And he's a good businessman. Tommy Lee is a good drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Mick Mars is a really good guitar player.
And
I maintain that Vince Neil is the worst to ever do it.
Absolute weak link. I really don't get it. I do not get the choice.
But
at all.
Well, he started the band, though.
Vince?
He was the last one.
I guess he looked pretty, though.
No, he didn't. Well, like, I'm looking back, I'm like, you're not even attractive.
But he had charisma. You suck.
He did have charisma.
Okay.
And they brought him in because he was a chick magnet. I mean, he was a blonde.
How?
I mean,
what was wrong with you people back then?
That was 1981. I was six.
I don't want to start the argument over. But David Lee Roth's not that good of a singer.
He's better than Vince Neil.
Oh, I mean, I'll give it an
but
ace,
I will say that better. There are some moments. Vince Neil has some David Lee Roth type moments where he's like, ha-ha, or whatever, you know, like it gives me David Lee Roth vibes a little.
He gets
just
a
not
little
executed quite as well. Yeah.
But I think that Motley Crue is one of those, and because I'm sorry, Vince. He seems like a really nice guy. Like
does
I've
he?
Seen a documentary on him, and he really seems lovely as a person. He really does, and he's gone through it.
Well, that's good. He has a nice personality or whatever. But
the dude can't sing.
No,
and like the band is bigger than the sum of its parts. They really are.
They're the one part
because when they replace people with, you know, other musicians that are better, it doesn't work. It didn't work with John Corabi. It didn't work. It really is not the same with John Five, and John Five is phenomenal.
It worked with Van Halen.
We're not talking about Van Halen. And
oh my gosh.
And it's worked with, I mean, and when a lot of times we talk about, I know we're kind of talking about hard rock, metal type, but like, it worked with the Eagles. I mean, the strongest lineup the Eagles ever had was the last two albums.
I think it works in those cases because they go out and they find phenomenal musicians and they serve the music. Motley Crue is and has always been as much about the persona and the image. Mm-hmm. So when you take... It would, like, when you think of Kiss, as great as Bruce Kulick and, you know, like, you don't really think, you think of John, I'm doing the Beatles.
Paul, Ringo.
Yeah, Paul, Peter, Ace, and Gene. That's the lineup you think about because it's those personas. And I think Motley Crue is similar in that way. They are about the spectacle and the image. So that's, I think it's not the same.
All right. Well, here's how this is going to work. We're going to each draft three Motley Crue songs. These will be the very best Motley Crue songs of all time. These nine, because we're going to draft three. Three times three is nine. That'll give us nine.
Thank you.
Then we will have the 9-5 round, which is where we have to eliminate four of those and cut it down from 9-5. That'll give us the five greatest Motley Crue songs of all time. And then we're going to rank them 1-5. And by luck of the draw, I will draft first. Heather will draft second. Beth will draft third. Don't feel too bad for Beth. She gets to draft first in the second round, and then Heather, and then me, and then I'll draft first in the last round, then Heather, then Beth. And so I'll get us started, and this may ruffle some feathers, because now I'm going to fight for this song like never before, which we had one episode where it was not the case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One of the greatest power ballads of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Home Sweet Home. There's some of that guitar playing right there. Change action there. A little humming action, I think, coming there. Yeah. Look at that beautiful voice.
Possibly the best vocal he ever did.
Yeah, really.
So, I remember you said that.
Yeah, no.
Home Sweet Home is maybe not their most iconic track. It very well may be. Dr. Feelgood and Girls, Girls, Girls probably on the iconic list, but I would say it's their most universally liked track.
Probably.
There are people that will not like Girls, Girls, Girls or Kickstart or Dr. Feelgood that really can wrap their likeness around Home Sweet Home. This was off the Theater of Pain album, 1985, which was maybe their worst album. Mm-hmm. They had Smoking in the Boys' Room, I believe, on this album too. But this song right here may have saved their career because this album, without it, they may have lost a lot of momentum going into the Dr. Feelgood Girls, Girls, Girls era. They had some momentum coming in, but you know, music's a fickle business. You have one bad album and you may never make it back. So it's possible that this particular song kept the momentum going mm-hmm. enough for them to have those big explosions that came afterwards. Nikki Sixx, Tommy Lee, Vince Neil all get writing credits for this. It actually popped onto the charts twice. Once in 85 when it originally came out, and then again when it was released and had the remix on the Decade of Decadence album in 91. This song was, they had to change the rules for MTV, the Dial MTV rules, where I guess people would call in and request, mm-hmm. and they had to change the rules because this song was so frequently requested. It dominated the countdown for 3 months mm-hmm. that the network changed the rules so that they could no longer dominate the countdown. So kind of a different, when you think of your initial thoughts about Motley Crue, it's a lot of decadence. It's a lot of, you know, we've talked about all the things that they get into. I mean, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and possibly Satanism. All of it rolled in to one big pile of Motley Crue. And to be fair, they didn't strive too far in their ballad because their ballad mentions a lot of that, mm-hmm. but it really focuses in on a lot of the loneliness and a lot of the negativity that comes along with that. And so the ballad is really about just kind of wanting to almost separate for a time and just be kind of normal in a sense. So, it was a departure from what they normally did, but it played off of what they normally did in a particularly effective way. Tommy Lee plays the piano.
Sure does.
He played the piano intro on this. And then what I really like about Mick Mars is really good at, like, if you listen to that guitar solo again, just really good instincts on, like, the bends and then the shredding, mm-hmm. back to bends. And so you kind of get this really, even inside the paradigm, I hate using the word paradigm because it sounds like I'm just trying to use a big word. I just don't know what other word to use. The paradigm of a ballad, shredding and ballads normally don't go together, but he makes it work. But then he brings it back by slowing it down with those long bends in the guitar playing. Mick Mars, I mean, he really is a phenomenal guitar player.
Yeah, he's great.
And I don't know how he plays a full-size guitar.
He is a small man.
He's small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when yep. we do Spinal Tap, he could be one of the ones that trot around me. So anyway, that's my first pick, Home Sweet Home.
Oh, yeah. And like even into the late 80s, like at all the dances and stuff like that, I mean, this would be one of the slow jams that everybody, you know, I mean, it was a big deal.
And it's got a lot of lasting power because, like, you'll still see it on movies, TV shows, because it's got that hook that you can resonate with when somebody is going home or, you know, there's that return. Whatever.
Yeah.
So it's in commercials and stuff like that. It's got a...
probably the most melodic song that they have. And
so that's my pick. Okay. I believe Heather gets her pick.
Okay. My first pick is from 1984, Shout at the Devil, written by Nikki Sixx himself. Looks a Kill. On Hot 100, pretty respectable. This is probably one of their most riff heavy, just grungy, you know. Of course, you know, Nikki being the primary songwriter, they're going to be pretty bass heavy, obviously mixed tones and solos are amazing. And Tommy just goes crazy on everything. It is insane, like, to watch him play. I mean, he really is, like, he gives that puppy dog energy. Like, he is all over the place all the time. He's a lot of fun to watch. He's high energy, and he plays hard. And I think the gang vocals that you hear a lot in their songs, which may be by design, maybe to strengthen that
necessity
there. I mean, I'm sorry. We're probably going to just dog him the whole time, 'cause he's really not that great, but
yeah,
be that as it may, he is the lead singer. And, he pronounces things weird. It's just, it's strange. And which we'll talk about in one of my later picks. Now, it is very, very common for him to stand on the stage and hold the microphone out and just let everybody else sing it. He doesn't sing a lot anymore because he's got to be, well, they've got to be 60 at least.
And your ability declines as you, and we weren't starting from a high bar.
I mean, it's you know, you figure out where your strengths and your deficits are, and you play to those things. But this was, you know, this video, it's crazy because this is where they're full, you know, the full on makeup and the face paint and all of the imagery and lots of fire. And they've got all these girls in, you know, in a circle throwing them around with, you know, while they hold torches and stuff. It's a, it was a great marketing decision. For, you know, yeah. I mean, it was. And they were controversial, yeah. And they were, I think that, and this is an interesting time to, you know, since the recent passing of Ozzy, but he was very influential to them. And in that time period, I think they knew that, I think it was kind of that bad publicity is...
All publicity is good.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. And people were talking, you know, and...
Yeah.
I can't think of any of their songs that, you know, they're like Hail Satan or any of that kind of stuff. A lot of it is just in their imagery, which is not good. And I'm not condoning any of that. But,
I mean, they don't, but like.
I'll Shout at the Devil.
And also like in Wildside, though, you know, it says Our Father who ain't in heaven. You know, so
do they say that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I didn't know that.
So there's like a lot of, now that's not to say that they're necessarily saying, you know.
I'm sure
Wildside will come up, but I mean, they definitely at least hint And so what I would say about Motley Crue is, like, they knew exactly where that line was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they put one toe over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they didn't, you know, like a lot of bands, they go right up to the line. Motley Crue, like, would put, like, a toe over it and then be like, are you, it's just, we just barely went over the line. We just barely went over. Are you really going to not put us on MTV? Are you really not going to play us on the radio? I mean, it's just, this is what kids do at school, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, this is, that's what Motley Crue does, you know, or did for a long time. Like, I know you don't want to play this on the radio, but I mean,
I think that all four of them strike me as just in their personalities, and then by, you know, just natural evolution into their personas, they're rebellious. And so, especially Nikki and Tommy, they seem very, very rebellious. And so, they're just going to push that envelope as far as they can. And, you know, that bad boy image, they wanted to be, they probably would have been fine with being considered as bad, even worse than people considered them, you know. So,
I mean, and they weren't alone. I mean, like, no. I remember
Iron Maiden.
But I mean, I think Iron Maiden was probably just like, you know, I think Judas Priest may have very well have been.
I don't know.
But, like, even, like, with Kiss, right? Everybody was killing Satan's sorrow, and they were coming up with all these different acronyms, you know, all these different stuff. And when you ask them, they would not directly come out and say, no, we're not Satanists, because it was good publicity. You know, if they were on the news, and AC/DC did the same thing, to the point that, you know, you've got guitar players out there running around with little goat horns on their heads. I mean, they fed the hysteria.
Yeah.
And Motley Crue, oh, we'll just stick a pentagram on the
our stuff, and for kids, especially kids in rural areas, you know,
that had a Sunday school teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It just seemed so, I mean, it was a way to be bad, but not actually be bad.
Right.
And so, but you could, you know, It was a strange time. It was a very strange time.
Yeah.
But in any case, the riffs and the songwriting is very hard rock, very heavy, but still their image was so glam. They were doing that stuff way before Poison was doing it, but not before Kiss was doing it, you know. So they borrowed, you know, all of the stuff from these cool bands, and then they just really made it their own. And
they went a lot more feminine than Kiss, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they went like Faster Pussycat.
They kind of New York feminine. Dolls, you know, like.
I mean, they went really feminine. I mean, with their look. I mean, the makeup. Lacy gloves.
Well, Vince did, but, like, you know, like Nikki and Tommy had like the war paint, you know, and like the really spiky hair, and like it. And Mick, you couldn't have made him look feminine if you tried. So he just looked scary.
Yeah.
And so it was almost like a Spice Girl type situation. They all had a look. You know, Tommy was obviously the lover of the group. You know, and Nikki was I don't know. I mean, Nikki just kind of stood over there and wrote the songs and did the business. And Vince was the eye candy of the group, which that's what that was his intended purpose, I think. So, anyway, it's a good song, it's a good riff. And it's considered generally one of their best. So that's my first pick.
All right, Beth.
My first pick is Kickstart My Heart.
Yeah.
talk box.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was wondering. Is that a talk box? That's
yeah,
what
it is. They threw everything in
yeah,
that
they
song.
Did. So this song is from the Dr. Feelgood album, 1989. Yeah, that very recognizable intro. It's kind of like we were talking about another time, you know, like the Pretender or some other song. I don't remember. But we were talking about intros and how, you know, it's about to kick into gear. And that like revving motorcycle at the beginning of that, which they use again a few times throughout the song, got this super cool solo. It's like a stadium rock prototype, mm-hmm. really. And it's high octane. I feel like it's what, if you could put Motley Crue in a song, one song, it's this one. Because it's everything. Mm-hmm. All the tricks, the whole kitchen sink, just put it in there and do it fast. So it's based on, and I didn't know these things until I started researching because I can't understand anything the man says. But it's based on Nikki Sixx's near-death experience in 1987 yep. where the paramedics use adrenaline to revive him and literally kickstart his heart after heroin overdose. So, I mean, you could pretty much do a whole song of Misheard Lyrics podcast on this song. And you can watch a YouTube video where someone did pretty much just that. It's pretty funny. But it, you know, we've talked about how the band is just kind of surface level or, you know, it's sex, drugs, rock and roll. And this is related to that, but it's also like mortality, addiction, recovery, but make it fun.
Mm-hmm. Make it fun.
So it's not that it's totally meaningless. And it's, you know, like a lot of glam rock songs are really just that very surface level. Let's make this like the appearance of just living it up all the time, which this song is like, hey, this could have some consequences.
However, do you know what he did as soon as he got out of the hospital?
Probably went and did some more heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. it's consistently ranked as one of the greatest rock songs of the 80s and 90s. Rolling Stone ranks it in the top 10 hair metal songs of all time. It's frequently called the definitive Motley Crue song in like documentaries and stuff like that. Used in sports arenas, video games, action movies, certified platinum, over 300 million streams on Spotify. Often uses their encore song because of the pyro, the spinning drum rig, flame-throwing bass, like truly everything that they could think of. Let's do it right now in this song. Which is, it's cool. It's their vibe. And I like it. If somebody's saying, play a Motley Crue song, this is going to be the one that I want to hear. It's not that I don't like Motley Crue.
I just
think we got all we needed from them. Like what they gave us is fine. That's enough. And they gave it to us over and over. Like once I only knew 7 Motley Crue songs, period. I realized. And so I was like, well, let me go find 2 more that I like and put them at 8 and 9. And, or unless I found a gem and put it up higher. No, I felt like after I heard about, I don't know, 10 or 11, I had heard all the same song over and over. Like, I felt there was a lot of repetition of sometimes a melody. I don't know. But anyway, I really like this song.
Like Saints of Los Angeles, I actually like that album a lot.
But yeah.
But
so I'm not going to be fighting super hardcore for any of these songs, but but I do really like this one. And it's come up like lately on the podcast quite a bit. Wasn't it? If somebody's 90 and 35 or whatever that was called.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So.
Well, and to your point, like there wasn't a lot of evolution for Motley Crue from the start to the end of their run. I mean, I don't think there was a big
evolution.
Go listen to
Too Fast for Love and Dr. Feelgood, they don't even feel the same.
They may have gotten better, but I mean, there's not like...
I kind of feel like they got worse.
Oh.
I feel like there has to be, I mean, to me, it would be what we call in biology... microevolution.
Yes, absolutely.
There's not a lot of evolution. There is some
small changes.
Oh, I agree.
But there is not what I would like to call macro evolutions, which are big changes. So, like, you listen to, let's take Bon Jovi. Now, Bon Jovi, when he's doing Jaded, sounds nothing.
Jaded,
he didn't or not sing Jaded. that's well. Let's take Aerosmith.
Aerosmith for
let's
sure.
Take Aerosmith.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aerosmith, big change. 70s, we're doing Dream On. Then we get to like Amazing Crying, and then we go over. You know, later
crazy
on,
Crazy Amazing Crying,
you
know, Crazy.
We get over to. I mean, they changed yeah. dramatically. Red Hot Chili Peppers changed a lot from the 80s to like Californication. Big difference in the way the band's up. I don't feel like Motley Crue ever made these big wholesale changes in order to. They were a glam metal band, and they were never going to get out of it. And once the glam metal scene died, there was no path forward for Motley Crue. It didn't exist. And they didn't have the means, or they didn't have the. I don't want to say they didn't have the means. I think Mick Mars could have played whatever. I think that Tommy Lee's great. I think that they could have changed course enough, because some bands did it, but they didn't.
I disagree. I think that their songwriting, even like I think there is a definite big jump when they got sober. And like the songwriting and definitely the production, the instrumentation, everything on Dr. Feelgood.
Yeah, they get better because, number one, technology gets better.
But the songs are
better. I mean, better produced, yes.
They get better produced, but their attitude is their attitude.
Yeah.
They don't – the content of the songs changes slightly, but it's about the same content. It's the same content, but a slightly different take. You know, like when we get to like the Girls, Girls, Girls album, they have some songs about, hey, we do all this stuff, but it's kind of bad for you. Right? But I mean,
I don't know.
But
I
they, mean, when Nirvana hit the scene, there was no chance for Motley Crue. Because they could not, they could not change their content.
That's funny that you say Nirvana, because to me they're kind of like the difference in Courtney Love, say when she first came onto the scene with Hole and all that. You know, and then she was wearing Versace dresses by the end of it. I mean, they're kind of like the musical evolution of
yeah.
like how Courtney Love was just dirty and ragged and ratchet, and you know, and then I think that I don't want to take away that sophistication though. I mean, there was a level of sophistication in their writing, in their production, in their Dr. Feelgood as a song in general. Compared to, you know, Too Fast for Love is significant, I think.
Well, I'm glad you say that, because it's my next pick, and I get the next pick, and it's Dr. Feelgood.
Oh. I think it's a great song. Wait, there are two songs playing at a time. Okay.
Again, off the Dr. Feelgood album. So, I mean, I said that I think they got worse, but then I picked two of my top ones off of that album. But this is usually considered one of their best produced songs. Produced by Bob Rock. He demanded multiple takes, no sloppiness, separate mm-hmm. tracks. So that does show in the end product, definitely, versus something that you would hear off of, say, the Shout at the Devil album. And kind of interesting that I picked this song after the song about you know, you might die if you do drugs. And then here's a song about a drug dealer. But there is a swag to this song. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Johnny gets caught at the end.
He does. It's a cautionary tale.
It is.
It's a
Jimmy, not Johnny. Jimmy.
We're trying to teach lessons here, you know.
We're teachers, so we tell stories about little Johnny all the time.
That's right. But it's dark and funky at the same time. Mm-hmm. There's something light but also heavy. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to, it's interesting. It is interesting the way this song is composed, and I can't really, it rides a line that I can't really describe. Heavier than Kickstart My Heart. Not as heavy as some of their earlier stuff. They got more polished mm-hmm. as it went on. Definitely. For sure. But that goes to your, you know, I mean, small changes, but the vibes, people like to talk about vibes all the time. The vibes mm-hmm. were always the same. And I think that's where you're saying, like, you know, like when Nirvana and like the grunge era starts, a lot of reflection and a band that has built their persona on, let's just have a good time.
Excess.
Yes. Yeah. It would be jarring for them to try and shift into that, I think. Good bass line here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a full story about this drug dealer, but he got caught. So it's about consequences. And really, we're just trying to help you out, Motley Crue says. Six times platinum. It hit number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100. It is their only top 10 Billboard hit. Still used in film and TV. Like you said earlier, it's during their temporary clean period where they're kind of reinventing themselves, which obviously it worked. And their last album with the classic lineup, which, as you mentioned, after that, it didn't really...
That was not a good time.
Yeah, but they had one good last hurrah. A lot of good songs off of this.
They've come back a lot of many times. So,
yeah.
And you know, I mean, I feel like there were some bands that could have made that transition after the post Nirvana
mm-hmm.
Teen Spirit. Let's mm-hmm. say the Teen Spirit post Teen Spirit debut. I think. If Skid Row had been able to hold it together, because they were kind of dirty,
right?
You know, they kind of were talking about that life sometimes sucks, right? I mean, 18 in Life could have been produced after Teen Spirit, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Guns N' Roses, if they'd been able to stay together, I think, because they talked about life's not always peachy keen, right? I think they could have made a slight divergent in what they were singing about and not stray too far away from what their typical content mm-hmm. was and survived. But Poison couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
You know, the Motley Crue couldn't do it. Def Leppard couldn't do it. Def Leppard may have been able to do it just on ballads because they could do some ballads. But, I mean, they were all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But Nirvana killed it. Nirvana killed sex, drugs, and rock and roll. No more.
I think it came back,
though. We're not talking
about
that anymore.
I think it came back.
When?
I think there's an area now of, I don't know that it came back.
It's
not newer.
It sounds like, I mean, there's some stuff that sounds like rock and roll, which is what makes it rock and roll. But the content of sex, drugs, and rock and roll...
It came back in another genre. Sex, drug, and rock and roll came back. Well, not sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but sex, drugs, and party
pop. Yeah.
Came back in pop, hip hop.
Yeah. But, and I don't know if it's just because, you know, I don't know.
Nirvana.
I don't know any other genre besides hard rock / metal. However you want to classify bands like this that have such a longevity, though, like you don't see rap and hip hop artists, many from the 80s or 90s that tour like these guys. I mean, like, you can still go out and you can still see, you know, they're talking about Def Leppard doing a residence in Las Vegas. You know, you've got Bon Jovi still touring. Motley Crue keeps coming back. Kiss keeps coming back. Well, I mean, there's a nostalgia for their...
Here's what I would say about hip-hop, though. To me, it's like some of them are dead. Yeah. I mean, like, well, I think Tupac...
Yeah, but these guys
Tupac,
should be.
I think Tupac would still be... I think Tupac could still be selling out arenas today if he was alive. Yeah. I think Biggie could still be selling out. And then we got... And then here's the thing about hip-hop. They are much better business people than the rock and roll people. Like, you think about Dre. Mm-hmm. He is now... He's no... Yes, he produces. Yes, he still raps. But he is a business man. Yeah. Jay-Z, business man. Did he do it? Did he? I don't know. Did he? But he's a business man.
Yeah.
And we don't see that in rock and roll. Well, Snoop's a business
man. Well, I mean, you do.
Not to the extent that we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, well, that's an outlier. Most of them have to do rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Because they don't get into the business side of it, not to the extent that they do in hip-hop. Hip-hop has really, really intelligent business people.
Yeah, I'm not saying...
At a much more predominant rate than you see in rock and roll or country music.
Yeah, and I think by nature of where we live geographically, like, we don't see that touring as much because they don't make their way to our area quite as much. Hip hop artists are going to St. Louis. They're going to Dallas. They're going to not really Memphis, but I mean, like, they're going New Orleans. But in Arkansas, the market for them is not huge. Like, I was looking for places where I could go see Usher. Could not find anywhere hardly close.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like their tours don't necessarily bring them here. So we don't see it as much, but they are, you know, all over the country. We're just not seeing it. It's not visual to us because it's not on our algorithms because it's not close.
And they network together so much. I mean, they collaborate with each other in that hip-hop world a lot better than, I mean, like, you know, people get excited if, you know, two bands work together. Because two bands, number one, they're in a band. So you go from 5 to 10, there's too many. I mean, it's just too much. But, like, you know, if you get... You know, if you get somebody to work with Aerosmith or you get somebody, you know, some other rock person to work with whoever, I mean, it's like, there's like this, it's a big deal because it doesn't happen very much. Rap albums will have 6 or 7 collaborations.
Features all over the place.
Yeah.
All over the place.
But I'm just saying that they have created through their music and through their personas and through their tours, they have created a nostalgia for their whole back catalog. A lot of these bands have, you know. So I just, sometimes there's an intangible quality to some of these bands' music. Like, I've seen Bon Jovi way more than I've ever wanted to see Bon Jovi because one of my best friends, we have to go see them every time. It's boring.
But the nostalgia can only take you so far because it's based on nostalgia and those people die. It's not a lasting, we're creating new fans like a band like Aerosmith.
But I think they are creating new fans because, like, you know, I think, you know, they listen with their kids. They listen, you know, they get used in movies or video games or commercials. I don't know. I just don't want to minimize them too much because they did create something that people are nostalgic for and keep going and buying tickets to.
Right. But all I'm saying is they lacked the, I don't even want to say the ability. I don't want to say they couldn't have done it. They just didn't do it. They didn't evolve. They were the dinosaurs when the Nirvana meteor hit the earth. And they couldn't evolve, or they didn't evolve. That's all I'm saying. I mean, that's a great analogy, actually. Nirvana meteor hits the earth.
I don't know. I don't agree. And I mean, because they were still doing
a lot of these dinosaur glam bands. That's it. No more radio. No more MTV.
But nobody's doing radio or MTV. I mean, like, their tours are still.
We still, you know. Yeah. You tell me Taylor Swift doesn't do radio today?
It's streaming. I mean, there is radio. There is radio.
We still have, you know, the Billboard Top 40s and all this other kind of stuff, and we're still. I mean, go look at Spotify. We can look and see who the most played Spotify.
Yeah, I'm just saying that I don't want to dismiss them too much, because even after, well after 1992, they were putting out albums, they were having sold out tours, they were putting out new material. I'm just saying.
I mean, I like Motley Crue.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, I learned from them from their Greatest Hits album.
They had Enough?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
A couple of Greatest Hits out. They had Decade of Decadence.
That's the one that I have. That's the one, like, that the brick was, wall with the graffiti faces.
Yeah, and that would have just been in 91, Decade of Decadence. I mean, so.
No, I had Greatest Hits. It was Motley Crue Greatest Hits. That's what I had. But I'm just saying, and I like Motley Crue. I'm just saying, they did not have an exit strategy after Nirvana hit.
No. And as a later listener,
and
I will
say
tell
that. Vince Neil will tell you that. I'm almost positive Vince Neil's the one who was talking
there
about.
There was an exit,
you know,
for
everything
Vince Neil.
We were all happy, and then Nirvana, and then it was all about how much life sucks. And, you know, and that right there tells me they were not able to pivot and change either content or sound.
I think the rock world did have to back up and punt a bit because they were not ready for.
Yeah, I mean, because as a somebody who came along later, a lot of these songs did not stand the test of time. Because I'm somebody who knows a lot more of this type of music than a lot of people my age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I knew Seven. So I'm not saying they're bad.
There's a lot now that certainly did not age well past the Me Too movement.
That's for sure.
Well,
like, could you imagine taking some of this to a label today?
Now, yeah.
And be like, So, yeah.
Anyway. Is it my turn?
It is.
It's mine. Okay.
Tangent done.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So my second pick is also from 1984. Shout out to the devil. Too Young to Fall in Love. Written by Nikki Sixx. One writer is quoted as saying, "This demonstrated Nikki Sixx's penchant for sticky earworm choruses," which, that's accurate. That's accurate. He could write a rock hook, for sure. And again, since they came along in that MTV video era, this video is iconic as far as metal videos, you know, hair bands and metal videos go. They would probably get canceled for this video as far as the cultural aspect of all of it, I would think. But it's very much a storyline video. Didn't really follow the song much at all, but there's a definite storyline to the video. I can get with it when somebody wants to make the case that, you know, there's not a lot of depth, perhaps, to their lyrics. I will totally, totally go with that. So, but this song, again, the hook, that rumbly bass line, and Mick Mars over the top. Fantastic. So
fantastic. Give me 16 of them.
I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Is it my pick?
Yes.
All right. So now again, I don't want to sound like I'm being hypercritical of Motley Crue because I really do like Motley Crue.
I know. I'm wondering why we even did this episode.
No, I really do. I really do like them. But I mean, like that stretch from what, 81? 81?
When they started?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. To, let's see, when was.
Dr. Feelgood was 89.
89. And so
Girls, 87 ish.
Okay. So that decade, I mean, I really, they played well to the 80s decade. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
They were the perfect band for the 1980s. No doubt. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm being hypercritical. And I'd say that not to say because I'm going to be critical of this song, because I'm not. But I just want people to know I do like Motley Crue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, my pick is Wild Side. So this throw out everything that I said,
mm-hmm.
And this was an example of something that may have been able to survive in the post-Nirvana world, because this is a much darker look at that side. I mean, before it was, hey, we're having a lot of fun. Hey, this, you know, we're doing all these really bad things and we're enjoying it. Wild Side is kind of a different take. It's really like, we're doing all these things, but you don't really want any part of this world. It's really kind of the message behind it. And it reminds me a lot of what that 90s gangster rap was, right? Or late 80s, you know, like when you listen to the interviews with like Eazy-E about that, you know, he was like, listen, we're not glorifying this life. It's just the life we're in. This is what we see. This is what we write music about. This is what we have to do to survive. I mean, it's just the way that it is. And it almost seems like this is kind of that same message that we get from Motley Crue in this song. Like, this is the way we live, but I just want you to know there's some bad seating stuff that goes on back here, and it mentions all those things like drug overdoses. It mentions, you know, when you sleep with other men's wives, you may not wake up from your next sleep, you know. And so there's all these different things that kind of go along with that lifestyle. It's like, yeah, we live this lifestyle, but just want you to know this is the side you may not see. And to me, that makes this song one of their more lyrically, I don't want to say poetic is the right word, but it makes it the more lyrically complex. Like there's a real message other than, hey, let's go do a bunch of drugs and have a lot of sex. You know, this is like, there's kind of like Dr. Feelgood. There's a warning that goes along with it. Like, you know, you can do all this stuff, but what you see in the videos, there's a darker side to this. That, and then, like, it's very riff heavy.
Yeah.
You know, bum, bum, ba da ba da bum, ba bum, ba da bum, bum, ba. And I like how they do it one more time than you think they're going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, like you think it's going to ba da, but they do it one more bum, bum, ba da, you know. To me, that's cool because you want to jump it. And it's like, no, we're going to do one more. We're going to do one more. And one thing I'll say about Motley Crue, they use they tend to use, and maybe I'm wrong because I'm not a music major and I haven't listened to everybody with such a critical ear, but they seem to use syncopation more than a lot of bands. They go off beat a lot more, it seems like. And Tommy, maybe he just has a knack for it, but I mean, it seems like they're pounding just off rhythm a little bit more. And it's definitely designed. It's not because he's making a mistake, you know. But and that gives them almost a little. It makes it edgier, I think.
And I think that because it's written, or at least you know in its early stages by a bass player, I think that's going to have a different feel. And then you know, of course, Mick comes in and just does his thing. And I think the fact that the bass player writes a lot of the stuff. I did not know that.
But oh, and this was on the Girls, Girls, Girls album, 1987. And Girls, Girls, Girls went to number 2, I think. I mean, it was a big album, yeah, huge album. And that's what I'm talking about. Like their sales, their chart success didn't match their sales success.
Right.
But it's because they kept putting that toe over the line. You know?
Yeah.
I know this is the line for radio. We're going to put this little
people were buying it.
Put this little pinky toe over the line. Yeah. Radio was like, eh. But MTV didn't have that. MTV was like, all right.
Well, and at Girls, 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 they had a bit of an image switch, I would say. They kind of went less, you know, the crosses and the pentagrams, and they went more into like a biker persona, you know, like their look.
Well, their covers them on 4 bikes.
Yeah, I mean, it was very, you know, just leather, lots of leather, and hair, lots of hair.
All right.
Your last one.
Oh, I pick one more time. Let's go with, what should I choose? What should I choose?
You didn't.
You know, we're all going to go away, but I hope none of us go away mad.
I love this song.
Bit of a guitar solo there.
Don't go away, man.
All right, so this was maybe the closest thing they had to a pop hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, this sounds pretty pop. You know, but at the same time, you throw in a really nice Mick Mars solo and you kind of have, you know, what's left of glam and metal. And this was released in 1990. So the Nirvana Meteor is coming really, really soon. But this was not their normal fare. This was definitely a little lighter, a little bit more playful than what they had done. And just kind of a different. I think it showed a different side to Motley Crue. This was on the Dr. Feelgood album, by the way. And Dr. Feelgood, I think we mentioned this was their only number one album on the charts. Mm-hmm. So I like it. I feel like it shows a little bit of what's it called? Flexibility from the band, that they could do some lighter less, whatever, you know what I'm talking about, satanic stuff. They can do less, whatever. You know. So that's my song. Don't go away mad. Girl, just go away.
That's a fun song. Video's good too. Okay, so my last song, we're gonna kick it. We're gonna throw it all the way back to 1981. Livewire. It's got that really simple, but that riff just chugs, and they literally spent days on this whole album. And, I mean, you can tell the massive, massive difference in, you know, post Girls, Girls, Girls to this stuff. But, like, I always feel like I want to hear Sebastian Bach do this song. And in a... you know, in a studio where they could really just redo everything. And because I think the songs are good, and I think that they hold some, you know, I think a lot of them still hold up. I think this song holds up really well. And I will say this. I do not discount the effect that Nirvana had on the music world, especially the rock world. But sometimes I feel like we give them a little too much credit for just destroying everything. I think they changed things, but I think that, you know, like those people, they had to change to keep up with how, you know, some things were going, but I don't.
The problem is they didn't. Like, I don't fault Nirvana. Nirvana gets us a because I love Nirvana for one thing. But there was, I think, and I read the book Nothing But a Good Time, which is a great book,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who said it. It might have been a producer. It might have been one of the people in the band. It said that it is not Nirvana's fault. It's rock and roll's fault. Rock and roll kept producing basically the same thing year after year, band after band. They oversaturated.
Yeah.
And Nirvana was the counterculture, was the counter movement to that. And unfortunately, rock and roll didn't change.
I mean, but that's what the industry does. So, they find the new thing. They create copy after copy after mm-hmm. copy after copy. And they try to find all – and then – you have to reinvent mm-hmm. the wheel a little bit, you know, and it happened to Nirvana and grunge. And I mean, it mm-hmm. happened to them too.
Sure.
And,
but we saw where some bands were able to, Dave Grohl was able to navigate these waters,
right?
You know, whether it's Nirvana, then Foo Fighters. I mean, he was able to navigate those waters. These bands in the 80s, they didn't find a way.
Well, I mean, like
most of them.
Let's
some
take
of them
Motley
did.
Crue for example. Like, New Tattoo came out in what, 2000? I mean, kind of a non-event, kind of, you know. Saints of Los Angeles came out around 2007, 8, 9, somewhere in there. I like that album. I think it's really good. And they were able to keep making music. Mm-hmm. And kind of stay, you know, somewhat intact and kind of wait out the, you know, stay at least relevant enough that when they decided to go back out, that, you know, their songs held up at least well enough for people to say, oh, I can't wait to go see them again. And then, like, I think the last time I saw Motley Crue was, oh, God, well, 18, 19. We saw them with, it was Motley Crue and Kiss and Alice Cooper. Just Alice Cooper that time. I've seen him with Kiss a couple times. But, you know, people still, there's, and it was packed. It's packed.
But what was the average age?
The average age, I don't know. But there were definitely people going with their kids. I mean, because, you know, you had teenagers come in. And I'm not saying that they're put, the caliber of the stuff that they're putting out is as popular as it was in 1987. But I think that they're still putting, they've got something to say. They're still making music. And also, so I think it is good business to, you know, to go, you know, because now the people that in 1987 that didn't have all that money for buying merch and, you know, now we've all got bigger old jobs and big boy jobs and we can go buy really good seats. And, you know, I think that they've stood the test of time in that way. You know, their material was good enough to make people want to revisit it. And this song is actually number 17 on VH1's list of the 40 greatest metal songs of all time.
And what I would say about this song is, you could almost, and again, I'm no expert in metal as a whole, but I almost felt like this was a song that could have been placed in the early thrash. When you listen to that guitar,
yeah,
like this could have been, you know, like Motley Crue could have had a pathway in thrash metal if they wanted to.
I would love to, you know, like it almost like
they would have had to throw away the eyeshadow and the high heels, probably. Yeah. I mean, I don't think, you know, Slayer,
like, I can hear Motorhead
and Anthrax would have been like this,
you know, bands like Motorhead, yeah. But I mean, like.
Just straight heavy metal, like, not the glam.
Yeah, yeah, and like, you know, I mean, like,
because Motorhead was not glam.
No, no, nor is like AC/DC.
Right,
and all of their stuff sounds the same. And it's just, you know, it's, you know, some guys with a really good, really fast guitar player and a much better singer. I'll give them that.
Too much better.
You know, yes, and. So, I mean, the Vince element for me, I will admit, it is significant. But, like, Too Fast for Love, the single, is, I love the song in spite of how bad the vocals are. The vocals are terrible. But there are some really, really good songs. I kind of wish they would have gone back and just redone them. And they did on a couple of their, like, greatest hits albums and stuff like that. They redid a couple.
All right. But, so I guess we can go through the ones that
Beth has one last.
Oh, you got one more pick.
Yeah. So
let's do this thing.
Yeah. My third pick is Shout at the Devil.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
No girls, girls, girls.
The choruses are good, though. They really shine in the chorus.
When
everybody else. Yeah. Musically,
like,
it's cool.
Break right here.
very cool. He just didn't have to wow wow wow. If he didn't, if we didn't have that,
but we do
musically. Oh, I like that. It's
that,
cool.
That's his best vocal moment in the whole song.
Oh man,
it best, shows a little versatility.
You remember that time when he stops? That's the best time. So
the best singing at the concerts when he stops and holds yeah, out the
when he pulls the Justin Timberlake. Which man, who knows? He had Lyme disease.
I know.
Poor crazy guy. Anyway, so musically, I like this song. Very cool. The riff is awesome. Yeah. I like their... I know that I picked higher, their more polished glam stuff. But I do really like that more heavy stuff. It seems like... You know when you go to a concert and you hear a band you've never heard before and you're like, man... Mm-hmm. This is good. And then you go and you listen to their recording and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what they had going on this one because it was so not well produced. It almost felt like it had that live feel because it was kind of disjointed and not super well made. So you got that feel with it. But this is a song that built their reputation with the theatrical, dangerous feel. The pounding drums, the chanting is kind of primal. And it launched them into popularity and mainstream. Obviously, like we talked about, causing a lot of controversy during the Satanic Panic. Pentagram imagery, outrage ensues. But like you said, we are shouting at the devil. And if you read the lyrics, because obviously you can't, again, understand them, but he's talking about the devil is not good. He's not glorifying him. I think you could probably do this at a youth retreat, a medley with To Hell with the Devil, yes, and really bring in some students that you had not previously reached. In the 2000s, yeah, anyway, yeah. I think you could.
Have Strapper yeah open for Motley Crue.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be something? They toured together. Well, how about that? See? It's church song.
Except it says Six was exploring Satanism at the time he wrote this.
Well, maybe that's why I figured it. Exploring, figured it was bad. Yeah. But yeah, Fifth Sunday Singing. Y'all pull this out the next
yes
one.
Yes.
Four times platinum. It's their breakout track. They were leading in glam metal before it got super polished. Mm-hmm. They were at the front. They were at the forefront of that for sure. This song is used in horror soundtracks, video games. You often hear it as their opening song at shows. I think this song is much cooler than some of their other stuff. And cooler in a way of it's not mysterious, but darker. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're in the mood for that. Sometimes you're in the mood for, you know, the hairspray and the eyeshadow and all of that. And sometimes you're in the mood for something a little more scary. And I think it might be their most important song. Because it really pushed them into the mainstream and, would you have Motley Crue without this song? Could they have launched it with any other song off of this? You could make that case, but I think just with the content of the lyrics, the imagery that they used, and like what we're saying, where they really got their... that reputation of being these, you know, are we satanic? Are we not? You know, getting everybody talking about them. Would that have happened with another song? Would that have happened with like Livewire or something like that? Probably not. So a very important song for them, whether they intended those consequences or not.
Yeah.
So I know we kind of got to hurry,
yeah,
but this is interesting about this. Okay. So Tom Zutuet was their A&R rep. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this is what he says about, particularly, I guess, this album, the song, and Six, and Nikki Six. Nikki Six was exploring Satanism at the time, wanted to call the song in the album Shout With the Devil.
Whoops.
Zutaut, I don't know, was having a hard enough time getting the label to promote the band, and he knew the title would make it harder, but Six was determined to go with the devil theme and told Zutaut, "It just looks cool. It's meaningless symbols and stuff." He didn't say stuff. "I'm just doing this to piss people off. Uh-huh. It's not like I worship Satan or anything." But then Zutaut saw Nikki Six two nights later, and he witnessed a knife and a fork rise off the table and stick into the ceiling. And he wrote, I looked at Nikki and freaked out. There is no more shout with the devil. If you keep shouting with the devil, you're going to get killed. I truly believe that Nikki had unknowingly tapped into something evil, something more dangerous than he can control, and was on the verge of seriously hurting him. Nikki must have realized the same thing because he decided on his own to change the album title to Shout at the
Devil. There you go.
Well, there you go.
I think that not to the level of Gene Simmons and Ozzy, but I think that they knew that that was, you know.
Yeah. It's going to get attention.
It's going to get big. Yeah, yep. It's going to get attention. So
now we have 9 songs.
We do.
Okay. And they are?
Ben drafted Home Sweet Home, Wild Side, and Don't Go Away Mad. Heather drafted Looks That Kill, Too Young to Fall in Love, and Live Wire. And I drafted Kickstart My Heart, Dr. Feelgood, and Shout at the Devil.
Okay, real quick, the songs that I had that did not get drafted. I had Girls, 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 pretty high on my list, number 5. I had Same Old Situation. And I had Without You.
Oh, yeah, gosh.
But without, no, but not, it's not Without You, it's Without You. But without you, without you.
That hurts my
Which, you know, all the Southern boys that like a little tobacco are like, oh, I don't want to go without my chew. Okay. Beth, did you have any songs that did not make the cut?
Yes. Girls, Girls, Girls. Mm-hmm. Same Old Situation. Mm-hmm. Same as you. And Smoking in the Boys Room, literally, again, because I didn't know any other songs. But I realized I did know Live Wire.
Yeah.
So I knew 8.
Heather?
I think all of mine got mentioned but by one of you.
And I also want to say, Justin Henderson, if you're listening... Dude would play Glitter on repeat.
Glitter. Ugh.
Glitter, don't you leave me. Please believe me. All right. So we now have 9 songs. We got to cut it from 9 to 5.
Oh, Too Fast for Love. What? That didn't get mentioned.
Oh.
Too Fast.
Okay. Now we've got 9 songs and we've got to cut it from 9 to 5.
Working 9 to 5. I changed the key.
That was the worst performance. Y'all made Vince Neil sound amazing.
Oh, rude.
Okay, so I am going to assume that Home Sweet Home can go over, and I'm going to assume that Kickstart can go over. I'm making assumptions here.
I'm okay with both of them.
Because I have Kickstart number 2. Looks That Kill, I had number 8 on my list.
I didn't have that one.
Ooh.
I had Dr. Feelgood number 3 on my list. Heather, where was
7.
It?
7.
I had, the next one was Too Young to Fall in Love. I did not have that on my list.
Ugh. The heck?
I did not have Livewire on my list either.
Oh my God, y'all.
Did you have Looks That Kill on your list? You did not have it on your list.
Oh.
Okay.
I have a problem with leaving Looks That Kill. I mean, generally across the board, that is considered one of their absolutely best songs.
One of their top 9, probably, for sure.
Oh, my God.
So we can for sure put Home Sweet Home and Kickstart.
I think so.
They were my 1 and 2 as
well. Where were they on your list?
8.
Oh, my
Kickstart
God.
Was 8?
Mm-hmm.
Where was Home Sweet Home?
1.
Oh, 1.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well.
I mean,
maybe we can't just move it over.
Home Sweet Home can definitely go.
Where did you have Feelgood, Dr. Feelgood?
7.
What about Wild Side? Did you have Wild Side?
I did not have Wild Side at all.
Oh. I had it at 7.
Ooh. Okay. What about Don't Go Away Mad.
Nope. I had it at 9.
What about Shout at the Devil?
Nope.
I didn't have Shout at the Devil either. So there weren't many that was on everybody's list, as it turns out, that got drafted.
Okay, so which ones were those? We can maybe...
You did not have Looks That Kill?
No.
Okay.
I think we all had Kickstart.
We all had Kickstart.
Okay.
It should go over, I think. And 2 of us had it in the top 2.
Yeah.
You didn't have Wild Side at all.
Mm-mm.
We all had Dr. Feelgood, though.
Yeah.
I had Dr. Feelgood number 3. You had it number 3. And you had it 7.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when we do the math, it will eventually get moved over.
Yeah.
So how many is that? Is that 3?
That's 3.
And then we get into the situation where a lot of them... we're on two different lists. And so, Looks at Kill, I had number 8. You had it number what?
2.
Number 2. But you didn't have it at all.
Mm-mm.
The next one, Too Young to Fall in Love, I didn't have it and you didn't have it.
Nope.
Livewire. But you ended up liking Livewire.
I liked it. I probably would have put it on my list. Out of Heather's songs, that's my favorite one.
Okay, so where would you put Livewire? If you were going to reevaluate your list, where would you put it?
5.
Okay, so there's 2 in the top 5. I can't change it, so we could move Livewire over.
It's an interesting move. I mean, I'm outvoted, right? So
yeah.
Well,
where did you have Wildside?
7.
I had it 4. You didn't have it at all. Mm-mm. So 4, 7, nothing. You had looks. You had Looks That Kill 2, and I had Looks That Kill 8, and you didn't have it at all. Correct?
Yeah.
So, Heather, I guess the question is, because, I mean, you could probably pick to move over for sure. I'm not to say that the other one won't, but, like, if you had to choose between Kickstart or Livewire, which one would you move over?
We already moved Kickstart.
Not Kickstart. I'm sorry.
Looks That Kill?
Looks That Kill.
I would move Looks That Kill.
I mean, I would, too, because I had it on my list and I didn't have Livewire on my list.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. I'm not going to fight super hard.
I feel like Heather should have at least one because, I mean, this was her era. So okay. I don't have a problem moving
okay.
Looks That Kill.
So we need one more.
We need one more.
Livewire.
I mean, it could be Livewire because like now two of y'all both had it in your top 5. Where did you have it?
4.
4.
I would have it be Livewire or Wildside because Shout at the Devil I'm not going to get.
Yeah, I just felt really awkward putting Shout at the Devil in my top 10 list, my top 9.
Oh, I didn't.
Because I was like, man, it's kind of devilly worshipy.
You're at him. He's not saying it's good.
So, I mean, and I wouldn't have put it above Wildside anyway. So, it's going to come down to probably Livewire or Wildside.
Yeah.
Beth, because I'm going to pick. Ooh. I'm going to pick Wildside. She's going to pick Livewire.
Okay. Can I hear the clips again, just real quick?
Very different.
Yeah, one's raw, really raw. Mm-hmm. Livewire, mm-hmm. And one's more polished.
Yeah,
Wildside is. That's the era when they had all the backup singers and the.
Yeah. Sorry, we had 2 going at the same time. Best of me free, cause I'm a highly on running free. Little bit better than it used to be, cause I'm alive. Cool guitar on that one. Oh yeah, very different.
I'd say it's a better vocal performance.
Ooh.
The bar was not high.
Okay. I'm going to, because I feel like we have represented very well their more polished time, I'm going to pick Livewire.
Okay. So that gives us 5, correct?
Yep.
All right. So what are the 5?
Okay. We have Home Sweet Home, Kickstart My Heart, Dr. Feelgood, Looks That Kill, and Livewire. I feel like Home Sweet Home is probably safely number 1. You both had it number 1?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, that may be the order.
It might. That makes sense. Because that's what I would do.
Yeah, and that's probably what I would do, too.
Well, hey, we did it. You want to hear it again?
Okay,
the final ranking.
All right, hey.
The definitive list, the best of Motley Crue as told by us, because we're such big fans.
And we're the only list.
I am a big fan.
I know. And I'm saying I'm not a fan.
Too. Listen, I am too.
They're fine.
I mean, for 81 to 89, they were exactly what rock and roll was all about. I mean, they lived it, sang it. They just... It was not what rock and roll was about in 1992.
But they've been going for 44 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nuts.
But
in that 8-year span, they were the biggest rock band in the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that is an incredible accomplishment, because some bands have one album.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's it. And in fact, most bands don't have any albums.
That's true.
You know,
yeah, that's right.
Or they have an album that gets released and it duds.
Yeah.
And you never hear from them again. So, I mean, to say that for 8 years they were the biggest rock band, or one or even one of the biggest rock mm-hmm. bands, at a time when rock and roll was selling out arenas mm-hmm. like crazy, to say that they are in competition to possibly be the number one rock and roll arena band of that era, that's an incredible statement.
Yeah. All right. The top five. The best Motley Crue songs. Number one, Home Sweet Home. Number two, Kickstart My Heart. Number three, Dr. Feelgood. Four, Looks That Kill. And five, Livewire.
I think it's a pretty good list.
I bet we get some
thoughts.
Some pushback on that. That's okay. Yeah. It's all right.
That's right. Just know that you'll almost be as correct as us if you disagree.
But tell us on all of our social media.
Yeah.
Give us your thoughts.
Let us know where you think we got it wrong.
We do want to hear your thoughts and feelings.
We do. Yeah. But we also want a good review. So
yeah, right.
Just because you don't agree with us.
That's right.
5 stars on Yelp.
Yep.
Are we on Yelp?
No.
Could we be on Yelp? Is there a way to
I don't know. We're not a good or service, are we?
We are a service.
Entertainment.
We're informing the people.
Maybe.
But hey, there are ways to get a hold of us, though, and you can catch us on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Search for The Music List or The Music List Podcast. And I promise you, if you make contact with us, we will respond. We love the listeners that let us know where we're right, where we're wrong. If you have suggestions for a podcast episode, we would love to have those, too. And we will catch up with you in 2 weeks.
Joining us on the Music List Podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode.
She almost had it.